This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. My guest today is UNICEF social policy expert Altaf Deviati. She's here to discuss Budget 2019 and whether it is a child-friendly one. Altaf, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, what are your thoughts on Budget 2019 and its consideration towards children?
Well, as a staff of UNICEF and as well as a Malaysian, we're quite happy with the budget. It is a rather progressive budget, albeit I think there is areas for, definitely room for improvement like any other budgets. But what I say is it child-friendly? I think it's on the road to be a child-friendly budget. I guess what you need to realise probably is also answer what is a child-friendly budget. Basically, budgets that reflect child rights adequately addresses children's issues such as poverty, malnutrition, education. So that would be considered equitably child-friendly. So in this context, I think this budget did try to address those issues, though there is definitely room for improvement.
How so? How are they addressing things like, you know, malnourishment and children's welfare?
Two things that strikes it most. Firstly is the revised cost of living aid, or previously known as BRIM. Previously, it was just cash transfers for household, but this time there was a specific addressed and mention that it will target also in specific children within the household. So every child within the bottom 40 household with a maximum of 4 will receive individually 120. And that to me is, that's good. I mean, that is prioritizing and addressing the fact that children is an important demographic. Secondly, is the sugar tax. I mean, the sugar sweetened beverage tax. We know for a fact that, and this is not just in Malaysia, this is globally, not just children, the public intake of sugar is high. Malaysia's intake is one of the highest, if not the highest in the region. And children is one of the demographic most vulnerable to this. So addressing that, knowing that children have a high number of sugar intake through sweetened beverages is a good move.
And you've been quoted in the press as saying that the sugar tax does not go far enough. It is something that has been lobbied very heavily by UNICEF in the lead up to the budget announcement.
Right.
Why is it not enough in UNICEF and as well as your opinion?
There's international studies. I mean, we're not the first country to do it. Even in the region, Thailand has done it, Brunei has done it. Globally, other OECD countries, you have the UK. So based on the studies, to see an impact, you should at least target 20%. So that would be about, if you change it into hours, it'd be about a ringgit 26 cents to see an impact of the tax. However, we also understand this is a new tax coming in, and you're also there's having to address public concerns, understanding the current budgetary issues and the climate of the country. So while we do say that it's low, but I think it's a very good start, and it could stagger. We could probably see an increase in the next coming budget, and there will be less what do you call that, controversial if it is. But mm-hmm. I'm quite happy to see that the public's pretty much accepting of this. There's not been very much negative feedback. So
not much pushback.
We've got much
right?
hope. Yes.
So I guess I got two questions to that, right? Mm. Because it's not at the 20% threshold or 126, 1 ringgit 26 cents, at 40 cents, if it does not nudge people's consumption habit, does that mean that the cost of living would increase because they'll just absorb it? It's not enough to influence their purchase or consumption of soft drinks.
This, even at 20%, sugar beverage, sweetened beverage tax, is not a silver bullet. It cannot be imposed in exclusion of other programs and policies. That doesn't work that way. Yes, we're worried that at only 40 cents, you're not going to see much change. But at the same time, we need to see policies and programs in place to also address other issues that's related. for instance, other issues that's related to malnutrition. Why are food that has the highest level of sugar the first resort for a lot of people in the low-income group, for instance? Is it access or cheaper access, or is it because access to healthy food is expensive? These questions need to be addressed and needs to be asked and answered, and policies to make access to healthy food easier, more affordable, and also knowledge. Urban poor is a big urban poor is a rise in any urbanized country or emerging economies, and this makes it more difficult for a lot to have access to healthy food that probably was much more easier when you're back home in the village, for instance, where vegetables were in abundance. So there's also a lifestyle change that needs to be addressed, but also needs to be advised and needs policies to assist families.
Yeah. So is it the fact that healthier food are just more expensive, or are they more convenient to buy, to procure?
Okay. The Children Without study that UNICEF had commissioned earlier this year that looked at the low-income families in PPRs, low-income flats. A follow-up, after doing the survey, we actually had focus group discussions. And one of the questions that we did ask for the enumerators to look at is, were there easily accessible to wet markets, or how far is the nearest groceries that sold fresh vegetables and fruits? And that was actually an issue because it was not as easily as accessible. That's even for simple as fruits. And we actually only asked them to look at a few fruits. And I think one of them was banana. I can't remember. But yes, so I would say access is one. Bearing in mind that in an urbanized society, people will always assume that even you have a car, you have a motorbike, it's easy to go. But all that is costs. And these costs needs to be factored in. And time. Time is also cost. Time to go out to let's say, super hypermarket, which is 20 minutes away. We might take back and forth everything an hour plus. That is cost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially for dual working
household
with dual working parents. When UNICEF released that report back in February or March, I think it was alarming. Some of the headline stat or findings were that in low cost flats, 15% of children below 5 were underweight, 22% of them are stunted. And this obviously alarmed the public, and some then government were also quite maybe not so accepting, did not take the finding too kindly. Now, do you find this present government more receptive to some of these findings and in trying to find a solution or way to address this?
I think when it first came out, it shocked a lot of people because it was the way the study was done was a bit I'd like to say imaginative, because we went and did specific studies in demographic and area. I will definitely give credit to this government for being very open. Albeit they're new, they don't carry the baggage of the previous government. So more open to explore and look into how to address this. In particular, the Ministry of Women and Family Community Development, the minister has been very much proactive, actually. Herself and even the deputy minister were very much proactive in engaging not just with UNICEF, I think with others, with the civil society at large, taking into the recommendation, based on the recommendations and the findings of the study. And that, to me, is a very positive move. Mm-hmm. And we hope to see more of that and better collaboration as well.
I'm speaking today to Altaf Deviati, UNICEF social policy expert, about Budget 2019 and whether she thinks it's a child-friendly one. In the lead-up to this year's budget, UNICEF has strongly urged for the government to include a comprehensive and child-sensitive social protection floor. We'll come back and find out whether this is seen or evidenced in this budget. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Trot and Tick. With me in the studio today, Altaf Deviati, social policy expert at UNICEF. We're discussing Budget 2019 and its treatment on children welfare in Malaysia. So you mentioned that the Women, Family and Community Development Ministry are more proactive and receptive to UNICEF's policy recommendations. I note that only $2.4 billion is allocated to the ministry this year. Is this enough to support child-specific policies? Are there other ministries that will be, tag-teaming with the women ministry to address this? Because usually the women's ministry is the de facto children ministry, isn't it?
I think firstly, overall, the programs and policies on, that affects children, that's not necessarily only fall under the gambit of the Ministry of Women. However, because of the name, probably, there's this assumption that everything falls under the Ministry of Women, which actually is not. I think a number of ministries are involved. And this goes back into why we're, for UNICEF, we stress for a child-friendly budget, because it covers a range of ministries. Maybe the best form to look at it is that one of the things that UNICEF really is pushing for is for the child-friendly social protection floor. First thing probably was, what is a social protection floor? I mean, it is very, it's a wide term. Well, social protection floor is basically policies and programs that is to promote and to support the most vulnerable in our community. And the demographic that is most vulnerable in our community includes children. It's children, the elderly in the old age, for instance, the unemployed. So to have policies and programs that buffer them to exposure and risk and also to enhance their capacities. So the policies that are taken to have a social protection for covers more than just one ministry. It covers the whole, all ministries in actual fact. So when we say that we want a strong social protection for that is child sensitive, is to look within the ministries and within policies and programs that has direct effect on children, or if they've not ever looked at it from that demographic, to include that your policies and programs will have an effect on children. That's what we're actually trying to push for. Another thing that we are also pushing for is, again, like I said, to enhance capacity. So it's not just about programs, charity programs or welfare programs, looking at children as a welfare situation, but also as a future investment. That today's children is going to be our human capital in 20 years to come. And knowing the fact that in 20 years we're going to be an aged population, how do we prepare for that? How do we ensure that by then we have quality human capital? Not just the quantity. And that requires investing, which is why one of the proposals, even in the Children Without study that we did push for, was universal child grants as a form of investment in development in strengthening human capital.
Yeah, tell me more about that. What does this grant entail? How much?
Okay. I think, well, basically how much really depends on the fiscal ability of the country, of course. But why child grants? Because based on international evidence, I mean, Canada has done it for 20 years. The most recent, I think, is South Korea has just been doing it for 2 years. There's now an abundance of literature to show that investing in children through universal child grants has an impact on how well they do later in life. The proposal that UNICEF had put forward, even to the previous government, was a universal child grant between 0 to 2. So while they're still in the mother's womb, until at least they're 2 years old. Why? Because the first 1,000 days is most critical for cognitive development of a child, to ensure that while the baby is still within the mother, she gets the right supplements and necessary nutrients, and then to help ensure that the first until they're 2 years old, they have access to mothers for breastfeeding, to ensure that, and also the quality of the mother's health to breastfeed, as well as the whole ecosystem. So we had proposed a child grant to follow the child that we could also ease family burden. The second effect of it would be to ease family burden. So we had proposed two modalities, one if it was 150 a month, one if it was 200 ringgit a month, looking at the potential, how much the country can afford. Of course, in some countries, you have until they're 17. So it really depends on what the country can afford. Right. But for UNICEF, I think we were trying to push for is for the critical age of the first 1,000 days.
Mm. So something more, even more targeted than the current Bantuan Sarahidup.
Yes, mm. Yes.
Okay. And, you know, I did a... looking at the budget, it's like about 70, 80 pages long, and a keyword search on children turns up only 9 results, and most of it came in that cash transfer program. And the other one is the 10 million ringgit allocated for childcare facilities in government buildings. Is this an encouraging move or...?
It's definitely encouraging. So that's without a doubt. I think I've stressed that part. But is it enough or definitely not? I think... when it comes to children, number one, again, we need to come away from looking at it just from a welfare aspect. We also need to look at it away from just a personal family issue. I think there's a saying that it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
And it really does. I mean, families, in particular in such urbanized areas like Kuala Lumpur or even Penang, where you don't have the luxury of extended families, there needs to be an ecosystem where it supports families, in particular young families who are not financially stable, who are at their peak for the time where they are bearing and rearing children, and in some cases, even taking care of the elderly. So you've got a sandwich family. So there is the need for more holistic assistance. And this is more than just having care centres. And in this case, it's actually within the government facilities. I think the role of private sector needs to be explored much further. Child grants can be very helpful in this context as well. Because when we say about child grants, it's monthly child grants. It's not one-off once a year. Could also ease a burden and help families cover, to a certain extent, even childcare costs. And childcare costs is not cheap.
Yeah.
If you meet the requirements that is put in place, which are requirements that should and must be adhered to, it... There is a cost to that. The question is the family to take full cost of that within the current economic challenges? That's a question that everybody should ask and answer as well. Should it only just be government? Or what's the role of the private sector? I think everybody has to play a role in this context. And to look at the fact that again, it's not... because you feel sorry or is it a charity? Because it's an investment. Those children are going to be your human resource in 20 years to come. And the question is, what kind of human resource do you want and what kind of quality of citizens also would you want?
Yeah. How would you, you know, persuade the private sector to invest in this childcare facilities? Because they are often... looking at they have more short-term incentives.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the challenges. I think one of it is that there are benefits to addressing this from the private sector's perspective. Having more women participate in the labour force, for instance. Having a happier, healthy employee and staff, knowing that their kids are taken care of. But again, also... it shouldn't be 100% the burden of the private sector. Like I said, if everybody chips in, the government, the private and families, I think the costs and this other burdens can be spread out.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if UNICEF had dialogue or conversation with the finance ministry before the tabling of this budget, but if you have his ear and he agrees with all these recommendations and he said, you know, Altaf, where do we take the money from? You know, what would
your
recommendations be?
I think yes. Oh, I think actually that was the question that actually they were throwing some of the discussions. But which is also why we also have to relook at how we spend the amount of money that is being put into all kinds of welfare programs. I don't have it at the top of my head, but it's in the billions, I mean, last few years. And the question that we also need to ask, how efficient have they been? I think rationalising all programmes and looking whether they meet the objectives is one way to look at whether there are forms of inefficiencies, which is why we're also happy with the announcement on the Fiscal Accountability Act that's going to be tabled in, hopefully to come in force in 2021, that was mentioned in the budget.
Right.
Yes, Fiscal Responsibility Act 2021.
What does that entail?
I think it's looking at to be more accountable and inclusive in how you use resources and allocations. At the end of it, it is really looking at how, because even in previously, I think Malaysia does spend a lot on welfare programs. The question is, has it met its objective, and is it an efficient way of looking at it? That's one way, at least, to streamline and look at how has the money been spent, and whether some programs should still be in or should be reviewed, and so forth, so on. Definitely, without a doubt, it needs to improve your tax revenue base. I think that every economist is saying that, and that's a challenge for the government to put in. And I was hoping that with certain introduction of specific sin tax, just like the sugar sweetened beverage tax, would be one of the ways to also garner more money and actually to allocate, clearly allocate it for specific programs. So that would be a good way.
Yeah, so. Would you recommend that we tax junk foods too, rather than just stopping?
If you look at what the global way forward is, I think Chile is one of the ones that's been really progressive in this, because there not only did they put the sugar tax, but also the banning and advertising of food and beverage with high sugar and salt towards children. That would we definitely do foresee. That's probably the way forward to go. But of course, every country has its own way of addressing it. Because it's not just about increasing revenue, it's also projecting and how the costs of these unhealthy products that we'll have in the future. For instance, the rise in non-communicable disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Ministry of Health actually had that projection done, which is why they pushed for the sugar sweetened beverage tax. So it's also about decreasing or already taxing your future costs, in a sense. But is it Peruvian tax? So that's would be yeah. So I would say
yeah. You know, you mentioned at the start that we have to change our thinking away from a charity or welfare attitude towards one that is more, I guess, empowering. What is an example of a welfare program, if you can, and how is it different from the universal childcare grant?
Okay, for instance, when we say universal child grant, it's every child gets a grant, regardless of their economic background. Some will say, what about the rich? They're getting a tax break on this, but actually the rich also pays tax. So actually there is ways to counter that. But it looks at children as a demographic. It takes away stigma. It takes away shame. And it also is much easier to administer administratively. And it's, again, looking at it as investing in children. Hence why we push for universal child grants. Another example maybe is, I'm quite happy that the Ministry of Education is going to introduce the food program for the bottom 40 in schools.
Hmm.
Now, this school meals is common. It's globally is the most common intervention that's done through schools. However, the objective is to address mostly short-term hunger, learning ability, attendance and enrollment. It's not really a nutritional intervention unless it's tied to food and nutritional standards that needs to be set in place. Now, from the National Health and Mobility Survey that's done by the Ministry of Health, we know that stunting, for instance, is not really tied to income. For instance, Putrajaya has the highest number, one of the highest numbers in stunting, yet economically is one of the upper parts compared to other places. So the question is then, how come there's the stunting does not necessarily correlate with income? So to have a nutrition program just to address the bottom 40, it's I like to say this, it's targeting in a way, and it can also be a form of shaming because you need to qualify for that program.
Right.
Could you imagine little children having a label? Because I was saying that
this is the queue for B40
kids. Exactly.
Yeah.
But when we also know that other kids are also not getting their nutritional level. So having it as a universal is not inefficient. Is ensuring all kids get their nutritional at least 1/3 of their daily nutritional intake in that one meal. Yeah.
So and this is not about kids not having enough to eat. They're eating the wrong kinds of food.
Yes, it does. Right. It includes that too. So that's why when it's... And it's easier to administer. It's also a way to teach about healthy eating habits because everybody's part of it. All the kids are part of it. And it's, I mean, Thailand has actually started on breakfast, I think it's breakfast programs for all children. So it's definitely possible. And it's, to me, your objectives are more clear and easier to achieve.
Mm. That's a good note to end on. Would you have any final thoughts on Budget 2019?
Well, Budget 2019 is, I think, it does focus a lot on human side, and that we're very happy with. It started, it's given a room to add, from UNICEF, for a second, demographic, children as an important demographic. And we look, some areas, the details are still unclear, so we need to see how it unfolds. And we look forward to engaging more with the government and also the public, not just with government, I think, with the public and with private sector on future programs and policies and prepare for the next cycle as well.
Altaf, thank you very much for speaking to us today. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.